I went on a trip one time to Italy. We had something at our college called Break for Change, and it was a spring break opportunity to go abroad somewhere, whether local abroad or far abroad, and be part of a missions group, a short-term mission group to various places. And I'd been on one of these before. It was actually one of the most I've been on lots of mission trips, but the one that happened my freshman year may have been the most impactful to my life. That's a different story for a different time. But the one I went on in my senior year, I don't know why this is, but I could not sleep on the plane. So we took off from Tennessee, or from Atlanta, actually, I guess, and we flew to New York, some airport up there. Got on a different plane and flew across the ocean to Italy. We left at, I have no idea what time we left. We arrived at about 10 o'clock in the morning, Italy time, which is like 6 hours earlier than here. So we arrived middle of the night. I could not sleep on the plane. And I thought, you know, I'll be okay. I can just go through. I'll sleep tonight. It won't be a problem. We get out of the plane. We're in Venice, which is cool. We go to the car that's taking us to the missionary's house that we're staying with. We get in the car and we start driving through Italy. Do you know what driving through Italy reminds you of? Illinois. Now, if you're Dave Segrist, that is good news. I was in the car with him one time driving to Indiana, and he told me, oh, Brock, just wait. We're going to cross into Illinois, and it's going to be greener and prettier and amazing. We crossed into Illinois, and there was a drastic change. There was trash everywhere in Illinois. It's like they hadn't decided to clean up the ditches. But so anyway, I digress. We're in Italy, and we're driving north from Venice to Ouray. Ouray? Nope, some other town. Ouray's in Colorado. Different town that I can't remember how to pronounce. North of Venice. And we're driving through flat, vineyard-y-type places. But it was a time in the year where the vineyards look an awful lot like the fields that we have here, except there's wooden stakes all along them. But nothing's growing. Nothing's happening. And I was kind of disappointed. In my mind, Italy is the Alps. That is Italy. It is the mountains or it is the ocean, and we were in neither. So you know what happened? I fell asleep. I thought I was going to be just fine. I'm sitting in the front seat. The driver's like, hey, who wants to sit in the front? I was like, oh, I would love to be there. I'm feeling great, energetic. We get in the car. Whatever number of kilometers later, I'm totally gone. It caught up with me. I didn't think it would. I certainly didn't think it was going to catch up with me in the middle of the morning while we're driving to where we're going, because everyone's excited. I'm excited. I got to watch the sun come up in an airplane. We flew over the Alps, and you could just see the peaks of the mountaintop stick out over the clouds. It was amazing. It was exciting. Everyone was high energy, and here I am asleep. Why? Because my lack of sleep caught up with me. The reality of my life over that past night, for a variety of reasons I was awake, but regardless of what those are, the reality of my lack of sleeping caused me, because it caught up with me, to fall asleep while driving across Italy. Now, it would have been sadder had we been driving through the Alps and I fell asleep, but we weren't. But nonetheless, I was asleep driving through Italy, going to where we were going. When I thought I was going to be awake and excited, I was asleep. Frequently we think that the reality of our past will not catch us. As individuals, we think that. Collectively as a society, we think that. And even more collectively as a civilization world, we think that our history will not catch us, but it will. So far in Habakkuk, we have seen Habakkuk pray to God to fix the injustice that only God can fix in their society. So God says, okay, I will give you exactly what you're asking for, but it is not going to be what you wanted. So Habakkuk hears that the Chaldeans or Babylonians are going to come and overthrow them, and they're a wicked, bad, evil people. So he tries to sort of manipulate God into changing his mind. As we looked at last week, he reminds God of his justice and his inability to look at and utilize and be part of evil. And so he says, so you can't use them. And God says, what are you talking about? It might not make sense to you what I'm doing, and that's okay. The righteous lives by faith. Faith that I am still the same good God now that you know my plan as I was before you knew my plan. Faith that tomorrow, as you take steps in this world with what appears to be a new presidential or president-elect, as you make steps in that world, that God has not changed. Okay, Habakkuk says. And then God moves to step two of his answer to Habakkuk. Step two of his answer to Habakkuk is the second two-thirds of this chapter. And we're going to read a few select verses. And you'll follow the pattern because there's really three verses in this section. We're gonna be a little bit loose with how we're going to describe this for a moment. Not loose with the text, but loose in our characterizing of what it looks like. There are five sections of three verses all saying the same thing. It's a wheel. We start here, we go around, and we come back, and we start here, we go around, and come back, and we do it five times. So we're going to read a few of these verses. Habakkuk, chapter 2, verse 6. Woe to him who heaps up what is not his own. Verse 9, woe to him who gets evil gain for his house. Verse 12, woe to him who builds a town with blood and founds a city on iniquity. Verse 15, woe to him who makes his neighbors drink. You pour out your wrath and make them drunk. Verse 19, woe to him who says to a wooden thing, awake, to a silent stone, arise. That's the cycle of God's second half of his answer to Habakkuk, which is, and very specifically is, not only do the righteous live by faith, Habakkuk, and that's what I'm calling you to do, and the people of Israel, you're going to be taken captive, and you're going to go through this whole series of things, calling you to live by faith, but also realize the past and the reality of the Babylonians is going to catch them because all of these cycles are about the Babylonians. So keep in mind, Habakkuk says in chapter 1, God, you are God. You cannot deal with or look at iniquity, at evil. How could you possibly use this evil people who God says they rise up, they take what's not their own, they heap up cities, they destroy, they run over everything with horses that are too fast to get away from. How could you use them, Habakkuk says? How could you allow them to be part of your plan? And God says, Habakkuk, have faith. Live by faith. Not just have faith once. Live today by faith. Live tomorrow by faith. Live this week, this month, this year, your entire life by faith. Everything coming out of your faith in Yahweh, in Jesus, not your faith in that your civilization is going to be okay, because for Habakkuk, it was not. They were going to be leveled for hundreds of years. And then they're going to come back into play, or for many, many years, not hundreds of years. They're going to come back into play, and then they were going to be leveled for hundreds of years. And then they're going to come back. Their society was not going to do well. Them as a people that God had established as Israel, they were going to be okay, but their kingdom was not. So let's just correlate that to us. Friends, we as God's people are going to be okay regardless of God's choice in president. Notice that we said God's choice in president. It was not a mistake that Biden won. Regardless of God's choice in president, we are going to be okay. And by okay, I mean we may all die. But we have a kingdom ahead of us that cannot be taken away. We have the opportunity to share that kingdom with a world who needs it more than ever, every day. And it can't be taken away. We're going to be okay. What can they do? Kill us all? I do not want that. But if they were to do that, we gain intimate proximity to Jesus. That's just good for us. What can they do? They can take away our freedoms? Okay. Things that actually are good for us, we like them, but may cause us to lose focus on the real kingdom that we're part of. So if we lose those freedoms and our focus gets driven more to the kingdom of heaven, what have we lost? Nothing. And we're not trying to go too far into this, but God chose for Biden to win. Okay. That's his path forward. That makes no sense to me, we may say. To which God responds to Habakkuk, I told you wouldn't believe me. I have a plan, and this is part of it. But keep in mind, the righteous will live by faith. And also keep in mind, your reality will catch you. Five woes to Babylon. Five things that they had done, ways that they had functioned, that God was going to punish them, correct them, discipline them, destroy them for. Now, we have had a kingdom in America. We're going to call it a kingdom. I know, I realize as a society, we don't call it a kingdom, but we're going to speak about our kingdom in America. It's been around for a maximum of 240 years, right? 243. That's the longest upon which we could say it's been around, but it's not really what we mean. We could even say longer that the colonies were here, whatever. Let's just say 250 years, just for a simple number. That's how long we have been a society, okay? That is not very long, you realize. As a powerful society, that is 10%-ish of the post-Jesus time, which is only a portion of the pre-Jesus time, Jesus on earth, BC, AD, right? We are a very, very small component of the history of this world. Well, the Israelites were there, and they were powerful. They had King David, right? King David, the most powerful of people. He was amazing as a leader most of the time, or at least part of the time. He had his problems, big problems, but he was humbled before God. We're not talking about David in this moment, but Israel was powerful. You then had Solomon come along, and not only are they now wide in military power, they're deep in knowledge. People from all over the world came to seek out Solomon's advice, to seek out his wisdom, perspective, discernment. And he gave it for a price, and they got rich. And then what happened? They divide. The northern kingdom, the southern kingdom, they divide. And then you have Assyria rise up, and they take power over part of it. Assyria is powerful. They grow in power. They grow in wealth. And they're evil. Just like Israel had grown in power, grown in wealth, and became evil. So God took over Israel. So God took over Assyria with Babylon. And now Babylon, spoken of here, grows in power, grows in wealth, grows in position in the world until their evil catches up with them. And they're overthrown by the Persians. And the Persians grow in power and grow in wealth and grow in position until their evil catches up with them and they're taken over by Greece. And Greece grows in power and grows in wealth and grows in position until their evil catches them and they're taken over by Rome. And Rome grows in power and grows in wealth and grows in position until their evil catches up with them and they're divided and taken over by a variety of different people. And we sort of see this big picture stop. It doesn't completely, but as far as kingdoms go, it sort of stops. But we see the same type of things go on with England and France and Germany. We see Europe grow in some of these power position or power, wealth, and position, and then their evil catches them and they're laid low. Not necessarily all taken over by military might. Some taken over by economic destruction and downfall. Some taken over by political corruption and ruin. But all grew, and then crumbled. I am not saying that America is about to crumble, though we may be. We don't know. I do not see the future, just so we're all clear. We don't know what's going to happen. But as we look at these woes, the ways that Babylon was going to be the ruler that was the ruling stick that was going to be measured against them for what they had done, we will see ways in which we correlate to them. And so what this needs to cause us to do is not despair, not be in fear, but instead say, wow, maybe God has a different plan than what I thought he did. And now I will live by faith in that plan because of who he is. In Sunday school, we're talking about Job, and today we got to look at the general movement of God's response to Job, and it's the same thing. I don't understand why this all happened, Job says, but I understand the God who is Yahweh now. And that's what he's looking for here. Shall not all these take, verse 6, shall not all these take up their taunt against him? Him is Babylon, right? With scoffing and riddles for him and say, woe to him who heaps up what is not his own. For how long? And loads himself with pledges. So here's somebody who's come. He's taken what was not his, okay? This is conquering people. Will not your debtors suddenly arise? And those who awake, and those awake who will make you tremble? Then you will be spoil for them. So here's the shift. You used your might to take over people, to conquer them, to make them your slaves and indebt them to you. Now, God says, realize that they are going to rise up and do the same to you. They are going to say, they will rise, they will make you tremble, and then you will be spoiled for them because you have plundered many nations. All the remnant of the people shall plunder you for the blood of man and violence to the earth, to cities and all who dwell in them. You're going to take over. You're going to have done all of this, and then they are going to do the same to you. Now, America, oddly, we're not going to correlate every one of these to America. But this is one of the ways in which we've not directly followed the path of Babylon. We're one of the few nations that in the years that we've been around, we have not taken over parts of the world, gone into Mexico and by force made them become part of us, gone to Canada and by force made them be part of us. That's a good thing. Now, we're not saying that there hasn't been some subversive ways or not easily to see ways. But we have not taken our military and conquered and forced them to become us. But Babylon did. They took over. They controlled. They plundered. They said, we're going to make all of what you have us. We're going to take your money. We're going to take your kings. And what they would do is they would bring the royalty. They would bring those in power. And they would destroy them or force them to be subservient in a public way so that everybody knew, no, our leader, our most powerful, is now subservient to them. So are we. Babylon plundered and stole. They took over and destroyed. And so God says, so now you're going to be plunder for them just like they used to be for you. Woe to him who gets evil gain for his house, to set his nest on high, to be safe from the reach of harm. What that means is this. It's the idea of you go out, you take from others so that you can put yourself out of the reach of harm. Imagine the tide is coming in. You stand on the backs of other people as an analogy to get yourself high and out of the reach of the tide coming in so that you're safe. That's what Babylon did. They went out to the world around them and they took advantage of them because they were the most powerful. So they took advantage of the less powerful and said, now you will do for us so that we don't have to worry about harm hitting us. It will destroy you perhaps, but it won't hurt us. This could take us back to the idea of the story of Joseph out of Genesis, where he was in Egypt and they stored up grain. Now, in that sense, they stored it up and sold it to people so that they could get some. It would be like storing up this grain and saying, no, you can't have any. Oh, you want to buy it? Too bad. This is for us. You die. This is mine. I'll let you decide if we've done that. Look at how we functioned as a society. I like nice things. I'm not sure I know anybody who doesn't like nice things, right? But more than that, I like nice things that I don't have to pay a huge amount for. I remember Dr. Carroll was his name. I won't give all the specifics because it's not the point for this part. He was from Guatemala. There were certain stores that he refused to shop in because of what he saw in Guatemala that those stores did to pay people as little as possible so that he could buy it cheaper in the States. Paying them something, I guess, but doing as little as possible, having them do it there for $1 an hour versus $9 or $10 an hour here. But $1 an hour didn't even supply their needs. Now, there's a lot more to it. I don't want to get into that. That's not the point. But his point was he saw how the United States companies treated these people so that they could sell something at a cheaper rate so that I could get it cheaper and I would buy more of it so the company could make more money, but not them. That's using your power to take advantage of somebody else. Again, this is not a political rant. This is a moral reality. Are we doing that? Have we done that? Do we continue to do that? If so, we may very well fit in the same woe to Babylon, woe to us, right? We may. Woe to him who gets evil gain. You have devised shame for your house by cutting off many people. This did not bring wealth to you, Babylon, God says. It brought shame to you. And you don't even know it. But it has brought shame to you. You have forfeited your life. For the stone will cry out from the wall and the beam from the woodwork, and they will respond. Basically, what you've gotten will bear witness against you. We're going to swing over to James chapter 5. You don't have to follow there if it's not quick for you. James chapter 5, we're going to read the beginning of it. We went through James not that terribly long ago. Verses 1 to 4 says this, "Come now, you rich. Weep and howl for the miseries that are coming upon you. Your riches have rotted, and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver have corroded, and their corrosion will be evidence against you, and will eat your flesh like fire. You've laid up treasures in heaven. Behold, the wages of the laborer who mowed your fields, what you kept back by fraud, are crying out against you. And the cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts." Or if we were in the Old Testament, have reached the ears of Yahweh Sabaoth. The one who commands armies and doesn't command them to just show you his power, commands them to bring destruction where destruction is needed. James is speaking to believers and saying to them, do not use your wealth and position to take advantage of the people who are working for you. Why? Because woe to you who gain who have evil gain for your house. You may look well and do well in this moment, but if it has been brought by an evil action, an evil doing, a taking advantage of someone, then realize it is only going to bring you shame and destruction. God is not going to be fooled into thinking that you got it honestly, is what they're saying. Woe to him who builds a town with blood and founds a city on iniquity. Woe to him who builds a town on blood and founds a city on iniquity, who by force takes these things over, who by force destroys those who many times were not even resisting. I mean, it would be like the city of Des Moines putting an army together and coming at the city of Renwick, right? I don't know the cities around here very well. Renwick being called a city is a little bit of a stretch. But we're looking at a really small town that would have zero chance to stop the onslaught that was coming at them, right? It's just not possible. They could try really hard, and they may do something, but there's no way they can win. That's what was going on here. So people would just put their hands up, and they would say, "We surrender." And then the Babylonians would trample them anyway at times. This ultimately comes down to not just building a city on blood because you were all fighting, but the destruction of innocent people. Innocent lives, innocent souls that were not fighting back. So innocent in that sense, not that they were good, because they're going to do this to Israel. And Israel was not good, but Israel was not necessarily fighting back. And then they're going to get destroyed just because it's convenient to the Babylonians to do it. So it really becomes an issue of the shedding of blood that's not in war with you, or innocent blood. Now, earlier when we talked about the United States and how we may fit into the one where we've taken from people or used our power as an advantage over others, and that sounds to many more like a Republican issue. Not getting into that. We're now getting into one that is morally the other side of the coin. When we speak about the shedding of innocent blood, the very first thing that should come to mind is abortion. The most innocent of people being slaughtered for convenience. And we're not talking about times where a decision has to be made between life and death of a life of a mother or death of a mother, which the death of the mother will be the death of the child as well. We are not speaking of that, because that's what, 0.001% of the time? We're talking about abortion for convenience. More so, if you've looked at some of the new proposals or rules that are out there, what I've read, I cannot guarantee all of this, so I'm going to just state what I've seen and done some research on, but not tons. There are laws out there that say if a baby survives an abortion, it is okay to let that baby lie there on a table until it dies, which is absurd. Even if you want to buy all of the rhetoric of the abortion idea of a baby that is still attached to its mom and can't survive without its mom, and that then is a fetus that could be destroyed, even if you want to buy that lie, that rhetoric, it is always stopped when the baby is able to be viable. And now what we're seeing is there's movement to say that that's no longer the rule. Now, how that's all going to play out, I don't know. I'm not trying to use fear as propaganda here. This is just what I, as the best I can understand to be a reality to our society in this moment. Friends, that is exactly where they are. The shedding of innocent blood. And if you want to imagine for just a little bit how long it would take to figure out how many, or to count the number of abortive deaths there are. And this number is old. The last number I looked up abortion-wise was 56 million abortions in the history of legal abortions in the United States. And if you were to count every second, to just sort of give you an idea of that, it would take you about 10 days to count every second to get to 1 million. So to get to 56 million, just conceptually understand how big that is, that would be basically 10 times, or it'd be 560 days. 56 million times 10 days to reach 1 million, 560 days. Counting every second of every day, it would take you about 20 months. That's a lot of deaths. That is a lot of innocent blood. Woe to you who build a town with blood and found a city on iniquity. The shedding of innocent blood in this case. Woe to you, Babylon. I will send Persia, and they will lay waste to you. He doesn't say that exactly here, but that's how it plays out. And Persia takes them over by ways they never should have been able to, but they do, and they ruin them. Behold, it is not from the Lord of hosts that people labor merely for fire. It's not from Yahweh Sabaoth. This is from you. So now they will come to you. Verse 15, woe to him who makes his neighbors drink, who pours out your wrath and make them drunk in order to gaze at their nakedness. This is odd, okay? To gaze at their nakedness is an odd phrase. It's used only a few times in the Old Testament, but it is not just seeing a naked body. It's the then interaction with that naked body, okay? So if that doesn't make sense, good. If it does make sense, then it should. So when it talks about this, now it's saying you're giving them something to sort of coerce them into falling on your side so that you can take advantage of them. Notice a theme here? Destruction, taking advantage. Destruction, taking advantage. They're both on the same level of God's perspective on evil. You will have your fill of shame instead of glory. Drink yourself and show your uncircumcision. The cup of the Lord's cup in the Lord's right hand will come around to you. That is the cup of God's wrath, friends. You're dealing out wrath, but the cup in God's right hand, it's coming. And when it reaches you, so does destruction. The violence done to Lebanon will overwhelm you, as will the destruction of the beasts that terrified them. For the blood of man and violence to the earth, to cities and all who dwell in them. What profit is an idol when its maker has shaped it? Just think about that. What profit is an idol when its maker has shaped it? For its maker trusts in his own creation when he makes speechless idols. Every idol is made by somebody, erected by somebody to be in position. How foolish do you have to be, God says through Habakkuk, to trust something that you created as though it were God? You made it. How could it be anything more than something you made? Woe to him who says to a wooden thing, awake, and to a silent stone, arise. Can that teach? Behold, it is overlaid with gold and silver. It looks really nice. And there's no breath in it at all. It looks nice, but it's just a thing, says the living God, right? So God's contrasting himself, the living God, to these idols, the dead things, the things that are just objects. But the Lord is in his temple, and let all the earth keep silent before him. God's final word in this is, I am where I've said I am, the living God. Everyone tremble before me. Why? Because I raise up nations to do my bidding, and I lay waste to nations because of their evil. And when your time to arise comes, you will rise up and no one can stop you. And when time comes to lay waste, you will be laid waste and you cannot stop it. There is nothing you can do about it, he says. In fact, if we go back in the beginning of this chapter, remember he says, write it on stones so that anybody who reads it may run away and not be trampled, but write it on stones because this is going to happen. and this is the result. I thought I could stay awake all night on the plane and be perfectly fine for the next day. And I fell asleep on the drive because I couldn't keep my reality from catching up to me. We act out in evil ways. As a society and as individuals, Babylon acted out in evil ways to rule the world. And God said, okay, but your past, your reality will catch up with you. Woe to you. Woe to you who heap up what is not your own. Woe to you who get evil gain for your house. Woe to you who build a town with blood and found it on iniquity, the destruction of innocence. Woe to you who make your neighbors drink, who give to them to entice them and coerce them into you taking advantage of them. Woe to you who make and worship idols. And idols do not have to be a statue on your bookshelf. Idols can be the possessions that you want to get, the new phone you've got to have, the new car that you want. It can be the time that rules your life. It can be your money. It could be the power and position that you have in a community or in a church. Anything that drives you toward it is an idol. Anything that drives you toward God is of benefit. So we look at these woes. We measure ourselves against them. To say, first of all, do I, as an individual, fit that woe? Second, do we as a church fit that? Third, do we as a community fit that? Fourth, do we as a country fit that? And if this is God's manner of telling us or showing us what is the future of Babylon, and it correlates to then being the future of the United States of America, so be it. I don't want it. Don't get me wrong. I have no desire to live in a destructed society. I want to live in a society that continues to allow me to play golf when my finger allows. I want to live in a society that allows me to move around and freely be who I've always been. That's what I want. That sounds nice to me. But if God chooses that we live in a society where we're punished for following him, where God chooses to let us live in a society where we do not have extra like we've always had, if God chooses to have us live in a society that is wholly different than what we've experienced thus far in our lives for his glory and his kingdom, all we can say is, okay, take a deep breath and hold on, because the roller coaster may get wild, but God is in control of where it goes. We may not enjoy the remaining whatever number of years of our life. We may not. We may. I don't know. First of all, we need to remember that the president is not the king. No president has ever been able to be the one who makes everything that they say happen. It just doesn't work that way unless something changes. But even if everything were to change in the opposite ways that we want, and the rest of our life were to be horrible and hard and difficult, then we would emulate the life of Paul and Peter, James, John, and this guy named Jesus. Because they lived in societies that were antithetical and in opposition to the reality of God in that moment, or the reality of God shown in that moment through Jesus. And they were okay with that, and so can we. The future may be terrifying. I get that. The future, or what we think the future could be, may be something that makes us cry out to God, God, please continue to work. Please, Lord, this is hard. It's not fun. Yet I know that you are still you. You are still in control. You are still Yahweh. You are still the same. And so I will live by faith, because that's what you've called us to do. Let's pray. Father, we come to you this morning, and we thank you for your Son, and we thank you for loving us. God, The reality of the future of our society is unknown to us. The reality of where you're leading us, we cannot see. We pray, Father, that we would be men and women who look plainly and intentionally at your Son and at you to guide us, to teach us. We pray, Father, that you would be glorified in our lives as we seek to honor and know you, that you would teach us more of who you are, that you would open the depths of your word to us, and that you would change our hearts continually so that we may know, Lord, and understand our depth of need for you. And let that reality cause us to just fall before your throne, before your cross, and humbly beg for you to guide us and for you to work around us. And when you work, let us trust you. It's in your amazing and holy name we pray. Amen.